This is a download of Farming Today This Week from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to www.bbc.co.uk. The presenter today, Charlotte Smith.
Today, farmers who say one of the biggest threats to the country's food security is the planning system.
A lot of the growers may go out of business because they need to produce more food in order to make the process viable. It will simply be a matter of food will have to be imported and the UK will have to rely on imports once again.
And we'll have more on all that later. First, though, some good news. Despite fears there could be a shortage of hay this year, with some predicting supplies down by 70% because of the spring drought, the north and west of the country are seeing high yields. Even so, suppliers are warning that horse owners may still face difficulties getting the quality they need. John Dorse is a hay merchant in Devon, where hay is selling for £80 a tonne, down from £100 when the shortage was predicted. Sarah Swadling asked him how the recent change in weather has affected hay production.
The weather has altered in the last 2 months. We've had rain and the grass has grown. These thunder showers come in no specific place. You know, you can be a mile either side, one person making in sunshine, the other man in rain. And therefore, the amount of good quality hay would be on the shorter side.
You're in the west of England. What are you hearing about supplies of hay in the east of England where it has been dry?
A lot of the hay is now fed to the horse wool, which are based in the eastern side, around the home counties. The quantity of grass in the eastern side is a lot shorter this year than last. And there is an export of hay from the west to the east.
So will hay then be in short supply for horse owners? Is that what you're suggesting?
It will be in a tighter supply than they've had known, say, 4 or 5 years ago. It might be slightly easier than last year, where it was a tight supply, and it might be just slightly easier this year.
Aren't hay merchants sometimes guilty of talking up the shortage of hay a little bit so that they can push the prices up?
Commodities move like the stock market. It builds. I don't know if the merchants creates the, or is it the normal punters that they ring one merchant and he hasn't got any hay and it's sort of say, oh, the hay's going to be short. Then someone else rings and there's a panic situation. People do not sit on the fence and wait and see what happens. They sort of panic and that causes the rise in price.
John Dorse in Devon there. Now, this week we've heard of many threats to Britain's ability to grow more food, from climate change to the pressure on land. But some farmers say one of the major problems they face is the planning system. Farming Today and BBC One's Countryfile commissioned a ComRes poll, which showed that 88% of people believe the UK is too reliant on other countries for food. At the moment, around 40% of what we eat is imported. I've been to the Lee Valley in Essex to talk to growers about their attempts to grow more by expanding their glasshouses.
This is Abbey View's 4-acre block. We've got a total of 7 acres on this site here. We're about a mile from the M25, right on the outskirts. The Lee Valley is just on the outskirts of London. Originally, it started off many years ago when it was horse and carts. That's how long it goes back, because it was near to the centre where there's lots of people.
As you say, it's a business that's been in this area for years and years, but it has changed over the years, hasn't it? We are in a very modern glass house. It's absolutely huge. If I look down into the far, far distance, I can see some people just going in to pick these peppers. And the pepper plants, well, they must be about 7 feet now. The one just behind you here, we've got these red peppers and green peppers. Beautiful smell in here. But I guess I'm looking at a big investment.
It's a reasonably large investment. I mean, you almost need to be bigger, and more importantly, you need higher glass.
But here you are surrounded by houses. As you say, we're very near the M25. We're in an area where there is a lot of pressure on the land around you. What's stopping you expanding?
Well, mainly there's houses almost to the sort of left of us and the right of us. There's fields the other side, but the fields the other side, there's always this hope that somewhere in the future it's going to go for building. Now, we've been trying to buy a 20, 30-acre field next to us to expand. He's basically won't get off unless you start talking millions to him.
So why stay here this close to London? Why not just move?
Well, mainly we're entwined with growers, of which altogether there's 27 growers we work with. So we also pack them and get them together as a group so that we're big enough to sell to the supermarkets, etc. So we are sort of based here, so it's not that easy to sort of up and move.
Also with us here among the peppers is Franco Pallara, a local grower from Coronation Nursery. What have your problems been trying to expand what you do here?
The planning system has failed me, really. We're in the middle of a planning application. We're learning that some of the stakeholders really don't want our development to go ahead.
By stakeholders, you mean your neighbours?
The parish council, district council, other groups, neighbours and whatnot. They really don't see the sustainability of the project that we're trying to build.
Isn't that always going to be the problem, though, in that for you, a greenhouse is no doubt a thing of beauty, but many people would not want to live opposite a greenhouse. They don't want to live near polytunnels. They're not particularly attractive. And surely you can see that in a built-up area like this, perhaps it's not an appropriate expansion.
I think society has to make big decisions about economic growth. My desire to be a low-carbon business, to be sustainable for not just for me, but for future generations, food being grown locally close to communities, these are fundamentals.
We've moved through to the pack house where it's really quite cold, and towering above us, stacks of peppers and cucumbers about 12 feet into the ground. Standing here looking a little bit frozen is Lee Stiles, who's secretary of the Lee Valley Growers Association. How much of a problem is it for growers here that they can't get any bigger?
It's a massive problem. The area of the Lee Valley is one of the most important glasshouse areas in the UK. We produce over 80 million cucumbers a year from just over 100 acres of glass. They cannot produce any more food, and the growing consumer demand from London means that they simply need to build.
If you're not allowed to expand for whatever reason, what happens?
A lot of the growers may go out of business because they need to produce more food in order to make the process viable. It's simply not economic at present to grow in, say, less than 3 acres of glass. So it will simply be a matter of food will have to be imported, and the UK will have to rely on imports once again.
The views of growers in Essex there. David Hackforth is a planning consultant and speaks for the Planning Officers Association. I asked him whether the system could help growers like those in the Lee Valley wanting to build glass houses or others trying to put up polytunnels to produce more food.
Planning can help. I think one of the keys is for local authorities to have clear policies on this type of development. Polytunnels have been an issue in the planning system for a number of years, and it's only relatively recently, about 2006, that the planning situation for large-scale polytunnels became established through a court case. But it is now clear that in the majority of cases they will require planning permission, and the more enlightened local authorities where this is an issue are bringing forward policies which set out clearly what considerations will be taken into account when dealing with planning applications. Herefordshire is a very good example. They have a very clear policy basis which takes into account both the need for the fruits and vegetables grown in polytunnels, which make a significant contribution to our food needs, and also the needs of the surrounding community and the visual impact of polytunnels.
Now, there are changes coming up in the localism bill, and there is a concern from the National Farmers Union, among others, that that will change the balance between local objection and national need.
Well, I think there is possibly some risk of that. It's not entirely clear what the detailed rules and for locally produced policies under the localism bill neighbourhood development plans will be. But it's certainly not the government's intention that it should be used to stifle development. Rather, it's to give local communities an opportunity to shape development that happens in their area. And I'm pretty certain that trying to use this new arrangement to stop things happening completely will not be successful.
But many local communities will want to protect the rural character of their area. And although that might be inconvenient for some farmers, you could understand why they would want to do that.
Well, yes, indeed. But of course, the agricultural community is part of that character. If we didn't have an agricultural industry in this country, the open land would not be taken care of. So it has to be a balance, and that balance is sometimes difficult. And, of course, the demands of more intensive production mean that horticulture in particular can be more intrusive than older types of growing.
David Hackforth, and your views are welcome. The best way to get in touch is to email us via the website. Conservationists believe they've made a breakthrough in helping struggling farmland birds to survive the winter. It turns out that one of the best grasses for feeding cattle can be an important food source for birds, like yellowhammers and buntings. RSPB researchers found that leaving unmown patches of ryegrass attracted high numbers of birds to feed on the seeds. Sarah Swadling met Shropshire dairy farmer Rob Kinniston, who took part in the trial.
I'm up to my knees in red clover and some other grasses which are all up in head and looking reddish brown compared to the centre of the field, which is all nice and bright green. What does this ryegrass look like, which the RSPB study has found is so good for birds if it's left over the winter?
This is some here. It's quite flat, little groups of seeds sticking out on alternate sides of the seed head. This one, well, about 6 inches long. Seeds are quite large as well on ryegrass.
And if I squish one of those seed heads between my thumb and forefinger, I can see that there are several smaller seeds contained there. Also with Rob Kinniston and myself, knee-deep in grass, is Kirsty Brannan from the RSPB. Kirsty, why did the RSPB start looking at ryegrass as possibly an important source of food for birds like yellowhammers?
What generally happens on an all-grass farm is pretty much everything is either eaten by an animal or cut and taken away for winter food. So we wanted to see if we left ryegrass, we didn't cut it for silage, would it produce seed? Would birds come and eat the seed? And would it fit in a way that was really practical for the farmers? And as it turns out, it's looking really promising.
So what do you want farmers to do? How much ryegrass do they need to leave uncut?
You can probably get away with, say, a 10-metre strip at the edge of the field being left uncut, ungrazed throughout the winter. And actually the amount of seed that would produce is quite huge. And what we found through the trials was that it's really successful in attracting loads and loads of birds to come and feed in it right throughout the winter.
What do you plant ryegrass for, Rob?
Production. It grows very vigorously. So it produces huge bulks of grass for grazing and also for winter forage, so farmers can chop it up, ensile it, wrap it in plastic to seal it, and then you feed it out during the winter.
If you start leaving it uncut, how do you square that with the need for us to produce more food?
I think we've got to maintain that balance between looking after the environment as well as producing more food, because we don't know the impact of losing a lot of our nature will have actually on farming. We may end up producing more food in the short term and find that we've cut off a lot of the wildlife and that helps maintain our production systems.
So, Kirsty, the RSPB's researchers established the idea. What do you do to get farmers to actually do it?
At the moment, the research is with DEFRA, and DEFRA are considering whether this could be brought into an agri-environment scheme, because obviously there's a little bit of cost involved. And the agri-environment scheme could make up for that cost and make it attractive for farmers to take up.
Kirsty Brannan there from the RSPB. Just a reminder, the BBC Food and Farming Awards are still open for nominations. You've got until midnight on Sunday. There are 10 categories this year, including Farmer of the Year, and you are allowed to nominate yourself. Just go to bbc.co.uk/foodawards. That's it from us. I'm Charlotte Smith, and the producer was Anne-Marie Bullock.